in a world.
Oh, as if.
Do you have some sort of businesswoman special?
Describe your perfect date.
I'd have to say April 25th.
She doesn't even go here.
Are you looking up your Lana Del Rey astrology news, which I don't have access to?
I sent it to, what do you mean?
It's a private account. I'm not that cool.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You sipping your latte?
I got a latte here. That's crazy. A private account.
This is top secret information about Lana Del Rey astrology.
Oh, are we recording?
We are.
Oh, you didn't tell me?
Hey, it's Nikki Jensen.
And Brie Piccone.
And we're
Late to the party.
A weekly podcast about film, fashion, and pop culture. Sorry, so did confused. A sneak attack for you.
Was this a way to get me off, off the record or something?
Yes, it was. I'm trying to divulge deep, dark secrets about you, Brie.
Wow. And my love for Lana Del Rey, which should not be a secret.
Yeah, I just want to expose it.
I'm not trying to hide it.
So, okay. Brie.
Yeah.
What is this Lana Del Rey news?
Need
to tell the pod.
It's her birthday. Well, yesterday was her birthday. So happy birthday, Lana.
If you're listening. Cancer? Is she a Gemini or a Cancer?
I think it's technically Cancer season now, I think, with the summer solstice. So let me just see. Because I thought they changed it and I cannot keep up, you know?
I feel like it's like a thing with like astrology and like Pluto. Remember when like back in 2006 there were like Pluto's no longer a planet? And then they took that back and they were like, Pluto actually is a planet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like this is like something with astrology. Like, we're going to hear, because they changed it a couple years ago. I think that we're going to be like, I don't know.
Okay. So it says, in astrology, Cancer is the fourth sign of the zodiac, considered as the governing period from June 22nd to July 22nd. It says to about July 22nd, which I don't know what about means. Like, you need definitive dates.
Like a cusp?
I guess. I guess. I don't know.
What do you think? How do you feel about cusp birthdays?
Well, I know that you're a cusp birthday, so I kind of like, you know, I don't know what I feel like. Just, it must be confusing being on the cusp.
But I will say, like, only my, because, like, I'm on the Leo Virgo cusp, and August 23rd is legit the only astrological sign where sometimes it's a Leo and sometimes it's a Virgo, like a true cusp. Everything else. Is not like, it's on the cusp, yes, like, technically, but it's not, but like, you know your sign.
Yeah, you still know your sign. You're right, because I've seen it like, I don't know, it confuses me. The Leo cusp, the Leo Virgo cusp is confusing, but I don't know. But you definitely give me Leo energy.
That's what I've been told by strangers. But but alas. But what is this Lana Del Rey news?
Well, it's not really big news or anything. She just made this post. On her honeymoon account, which I guess you have to be cool like me.
Wait, she made the poster? It's not a fan account?
No, she has two accounts. So a while ago, like, I don't know how long ago, maybe 6 or 8 months, something like that, she deleted her regular Instagram or deactivated it. I don't know, something like that. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to leave this other one open, but you don't expect to hear anything from me. She basically was like, I'm leaving Instagram. All her fans were really sad and like no one expected anything. And then she started posting on her honeymoon on that account. And that was the one when she dropped that album that she created. And it's more of a personal account.
The one that everyone hated and said she was like racist for having like white people on the cover.
Oh, no. Oh, no, gosh. No, I'm not as aware of this.
No, like the chemtrails and the country club.
I think so. Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
Sorry.
They canceled. Okay. Gosh. Now I'm going to get some, I don't know, maybe listeners will be writing in, sending me hate mail.
I hope so.
For standing Lana Del Rey.
But yeah, what's the news?
It's like I said, it's not really big news. Just like the planets are going to be aligned from June 17th to June 27th. So,
woo!
There'll be a celestial show and it's a rare alignment. The last time it was the stars or the moon, the planets, excuse me. It's Venus. Wait, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, okay. So basically from Mercury to Saturn, they're all going to be aligned. And it's, God, I lost my train of thought.
Is it like a good time for like manifesting or like abundance?
You know, it's been difficult to find the actual like astrological meaning on it because apparently it varies depending on who you are, I guess, and where your planets are. So there isn't one. I haven't found any good information. I found some information, though, that I want to share.
Okay. Put it on me.
Sorry, I had a thought, then I was literally about to say something, and then it left my brain. Oh, it came back to me. So the last time the planets were aligned like this was 2004. And they won't be, they won't be aligned again until 2040. So, but I found what it means, what each zodiac sign needs to know about the planetary alignment in June. And this is specifically about moon signs. So, well, for me, I'm an Aries moon.
I'm a Scorpio moon.
You're a Scorpio moon. Mine says Aries moon people will need to put structure in their day-to-day lives on an immediate basis. If anything's left in between or half undone, it's time for closures. Basically, Saturn will make you just do it, I guess. So, take care of your health if you've been overlooking it for some time. Dang. Oh, my God. I didn't read this before I hopped on. It says the planet. I read it, but, like, I skimmed, you know? I didn't see this part. It says the planet's aspects are not good. So hopefully it'll be all right. I mean, I know I need like a crown or two, so it could just be that, you know.
Well, what about Scorpio moon?
All right, yeah. So for Scorpio moon, it says current planetary alignment astrology suggests you'll be meeting and networking with a lot of new people, which will be quite meaningful and beneficial for you at this time. You also may be taking up many short travels at the moment, which will be mostly for work and not pleasure. Huh.
Okay.
So you're going to be working.
I'll take it. After your doom and gloom reading, I'll take it.
I'm like, jeez.
I'll be working, but at least I'll be traveling.
Yeah.
Does it say anything else?
Not really, no.
Like, I'll die in a fire or something.
No, you're going to be great. You're just going to be working, I guess, but in, like, a good networking.
Cool.
And mine was a kind of a long one. So it does say at the end, overall, it's a good thing as a lot of structure is coming into your life. So I'll have a lot of structure. So that'll be good, I guess.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I was just.
Sorry, I wanted to end on a positive note. I was like.
Oh, yeah. For any Aries moons.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, astrology, like, I feel like I used to be so attached to it, and now, lately, I've been really thinking hard, like, is it dangerous to be too attached to, you know, like, how can, I don't know.
This is for a way different conversation, but I think it's a slippery slope, and, like, a lot of times it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, and kind of like when you, like, are worried about stepping on cracks. Like, I think you can get way too superstitious on it.
Yeah. And I'm pretty stitious as it is.
Same. But speaking of planets aligning.
Yeah.
So for our second installment of Eat, Pray, Pod, we are discussing the 1997 smash hit My Best Friend's Wedding, starring Julia Roberts, our queen, Dermot Mulroney, Cameron Diaz, and Rupert Everett. And talk about everything coming together, because this movie is one of the most successful rom-coms or anti-rom-coms of all time.
Yeah, it almost is like an anti-rom-com, isn't it?
A little bit. Like, Julia Roberts is definitely an anti-hero in this movie.
I dig it, though.
Yeah. So before Tony Soprano, it was Jules Potter. But yeah, like, so what is your, because I have distinct memories about My Best Friend's Wedding, but Brie, I'm going to turn it to you. Like, what's your relationship with this film?
Okay, so I just saw it for the first time, like, this past week. I had not seen it before, so that's it. I've only seen it once.
This is actually the conception of Eat, Pray, Pod, by the way. It's because I was like, you haven't seen My Best Friend's Wedding?
Yeah.
Blasphemy. But what were your thoughts?
It was so good. It was, like, it's funny. It has, like, a little bit, it has a lot of, like, angst. Like, a lot of, what is it? I don't know if irony, it's not really dramatic irony or anything, necessarily. Because we know what's going on, and it's just like there's frustration because it's like you kind of, there's like tension, that's the word I'm looking for, you know what I mean, like when you feel like people have chemistry on screen and you kind of want them to be together, but then the way it goes is not, you know what I mean, like you can't really,
yeah,
it's like who you're rooting for, and then you're like, should I be rooting for this person? And I was like, oh, like Julia Roberts, like you said, her character's kind of like, she's not really doing the best things in this movie. She's the, like the anti-hero, but you still are kind of rooting for her. I don't know.
But it's also relatable. Like, we'll get into the meat and potatoes in a second. But, like, I think what's really interesting about this film in particular is that, like, we love Julia Roberts anyways.
Yeah.
So she can do no wrong as a character in anything. But besides that, it's like a film where you can totally see her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way she goes about it that is, like, not right. It ain't right, it ain't tight, you know? But yeah. The chemistry between Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney.
Right?
And so
the,
good.
The, wait. Dermot Mulroney is her friend, like, best Michael. Friend?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But they look the same.
They look the same.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Please.
Really quick? So there's Dermot Mulroney. I know this was like an SNL bit in the 90s, but who cares? It's true. There's Dermot Mulroney, Dylan McDermott.
Yeah.
And Rupert Everett. And they all look the same. Especially like 90s versions of them.
They do. Wait, hold on. You lost me. Wait, they all look the same?
Yeah. Have you ever? Well, okay, maybe not. They have very similar names.
Wait, Rupert Everett
is the best friend, like the gay best friend in this movie. Michael,
yeah,
is Dermot Mulroney, and Dylan McDermott is also an actor.
Wait, what is he doing in this one? I don't
remember. He's not in the movie.
Oh, I thought you were saying he's I was like, I don't remember him in this movie because I think I know who he is.
Oh yeah, he's been in like everything. I guess this says he's known for The Practice, but, like, I've never seen The Practice.
Oh, that dude. He's in, is he in The Walking Dead?
He's in Law and Order.
He's in Law and Order.
But he was, like, in everything in that time.
I've seen him in a lot of things.
But how do you tell the difference between those three?
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Like, at the time?
Yeah.
Huh.
Sorry.
No.
So much energy.
It's hard to tell. It'd be like if they were lined up in like a interrogation or whatever, you know, if they had to be lined up like criminals.
Yeah. I couldn't tell.
They'd have
straight
to,
up.
Yeah. I don't know. Sorry. Now my mind is on Law and Order SVU. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Any mention of Law and Order and I'm like, I go like straight like dong dong.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Like the music just starts playing and I'm transported.
Yes. They look like brothers, at least.
At least.
But this one stars Dermot Mulroney, which I will always want to say Dylan McDermott.
Yeah.
So bear with me.
Okay.
But yeah, this movie, I remember, I mean, I was too young to like go to the movie theater and watch this movie, but I do remember at Blockbuster all the time seeing like the VHSs. Like I remember this cover, like the movie poster so vividly, and it was just like everywhere as a kid.
That's so wild too, like VHSs. Like I forgot about like renting VHSs. Like
yeah.
Rewind, please be kind and rewind. Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't see this movie until a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I get it. I get why everyone loves this movie. Like, this movie's so damn charming.
It's really cute.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take a trip to 2000. Or not 2000. Whoa.
I know. We're always just in 2000, 2002.
I know. Let's take a trip to 1997.
Woo.
Yeah. So, in film, at least, it was the year of the Titanic. That's the year Titanic came out.
Yeah.
Which I still haven't seen.
You gotta see it, Nick.
I only want to see it if it's on that, like, the VHS, the three VHSs.
Yes, I have it on there.
Well, then,
you can borrow it.
Get a VHS or a tape player.
Yeah.
That's how I'll watch it.
That's step one.
But yeah, and Titanic was, of course, the highest grossing film of all time for 17 years, and it was surpassed by another James Cameron joint, Avatar.
Wait. It was surpassed by Avatar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I remember that film being big and all, but, like, I feel like it's not one that has stayed. Like, no one's going to go... Okay, no one's going to go and rewatch Avatar, right?
You say that?
Unless they're, like, Avatar nerds.
They're making, like, four more, and one's coming out, I think, this year.
Okay, I low-key want to see it only because I'm curious how it holds up. I saw the previews, but I'm also, like, I'm not that... I don't remember being that invested. The aesthetic was cool. I don't know. Maybe I need to give it a chance, but I just... I don't know.
I saw it for the first time this past year.
Well, what did you think?
It was kind of like Pocahontas with blue cat-like people.
Yes, they were like blue cat Pocahontas-like people. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it was very Pocahontas.
Yeah.
But yeah, 1997 was a big year. So Jurassic Park The Lost World comes out, Men in Black, Tomorrow Never Dies, The Fifth Element was released. And yeah, like, speaking of global hits, My Best Friend's Wedding was a huge hit, and it was the 8th highest grossing film of the year. But wow. Out of, like, all these movies that came out in 97, do you have any favorites?
Well, I mean, I do really love Titanic. The Fifth Element, though, was so good. I love that whole movie.
I love the Galliano costumes.
Yes. I didn't see Fifth Element, though, till like later in life. I remember seeing Titanic when I was like 5 and being like, woo. But, you know, I don't know if it's like... Oh, yeah. Alien Resurrection. That's the one I mentioned the other day. With
Winona.
Yeah, Winona. Honestly, though, that movie gave me nightmares. It was scary to me. Air Bud, though. I would say in my kid brain, Air Bud probably would have been up there. At the, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Do you mean favorite movies now?
I don't know, because I only I only have kid answers. Like, right? Now I love Men in Black and I love The Fifth Element.
Oh, okay.
What?
Anastasia.
It's a good one.
I'm going to say that one because I'd still watch it now and I love it.
I love that song on the soundtrack with, who is it? It's Donna Lewis.
Life is a... No. Road and I want to keep going. Is that the one?
Yeah. The Right Here Waiting for You dude sings that song. And it's a bop.
So good.
But as a kid in 97, I was obsessed with Hercules.
Hercules. I always think of that. I don't know why.
I mean, so obsessed that my 4th birthday party was me dressed as Hercules, and then I did a costume change and I was Meg.
Wait. Nikki, you were in drag? You were Hercules and Meg?
I love a good costume change.
Is this documented anywhere?
Yeah, probably.
I need to see. This is great. I didn't know this.
But I was also obsessed with George of the Jungle, too.
And then you changed into George of the Jungle? That is so funny.
No.
I love that, though. The costume, the theater of it all, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember they used to have these, like Hercules marketing was huge during the time. And I remember I had the whole, like, works, like, Party City Hercules stuff. But they even had Hercules ice cream that I remember being dope.
Oh, I did yes. That was such a moment. That was one of my favorite movies as a kid, though, to be honest. And the music in that movie, so good. Like, even the beginning with the muses and just, like...
Oh, so good. I won't say I'm in love.
Yeah.
Low-key will still, like, sing that song in the shower.
Same. I just, like, start singing and my shoulders start bouncing.
Oh, what was I gonna... Oh, I even had, like, a CD-ROM for, like, Windows 95 of Hercules. Like, my whole world was Hercules for a hot second.
I had the Megara doll. There was, like a Barbie. It wasn't Barbie brand or anything, but, you know, there was, like... I guess it must have been a Disney thing.
I feel like 97 is the year, too, when, like, so much money was just funneled into marketing for movies. Like, I remember the Men in Black campaign was ridiculous.
Mm.
And then, who beat out My Best Friend's Wedding in the box office? Batman and Robin.
Right.
That marketing was huge. And I was also obsessed with Batman and Robin. I love George Clooney's nips, you know?
Yeah, same.
And Mr. Freeze.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Freeze. Oh, I forgot about him. He was cool.
Yeah.
There was a lot of movies this year, honestly. Like, I'm just scrolling and I'm like, dang, like, for one feel like we don't get movies like this anymore, like this many all at once. Like, maybe we do, and I just...
Well, like, what are some other movies that came out in 1997? Flubber. I loved Flubber.
So good. With Free Willy the Third. Wait, how many Free Willys were there? Were they, like, year after year? Because I only remember one. I didn't know there were so many.
I didn't either. Like, theatrically released Free Willys?
Yeah, Free Willy 3 came out in 97, apparently.
In the movie theaters?
Okay, well, I don't know about... Hold on. Let me look at this list, because this could just be general movies. It's under notable films released. So I'm not entirely sure if that was, like, straight to DVD or...
Notable films, though. That's crazy for a Free Willy 3.
I know what you did last summer with, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Con Air came out. Speed 2.
Jack Frost.
Austin Powers came out.
Ooh.
Buddy, if you remember Buddy, with Rene Russo and a ape.
Yes, I talked about that movie. I feel like I mentioned it to you not that long ago because it was actually a really good movie. At least I thought it was.
I remember like it was one of the first movies, probably not, but first movies memorably I saw in the movie theater.
Oh.
And I remember being like very confused.
I just watched it a lot at home on my VHS player. I thought it was a beautiful story. So, I really want to rewatch it to see if it holds up.
Let's do it. Movie Club Buddy. Double feature with that and Mighty Joe Young.
There we go. I haven't seen that one.
You haven't?
Mm-mm.
That was Charlize Theron before she was big.
Mm.
I remember seeing that movie. So many 90s movies with apes.
What is up with that? Is George of the Jungle on here as well or no?
No, that wasn't out yet. But Liar Liar is... that came out the same weekend as My Best Friend's Wedding.
Oh, Mr. Magoo. That's how I know Leslie Nielsen.
Oh my God, Mr. Magoo. Didn't that get pulled from theaters? But I saw it in the theaters.
Why did it? Were they like, this is insensitive to blind people?
Yeah, it was a whole thing. Like, I've watched so many, like, watch mojos, and that's the only reason I know this little fact. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those, like, mistakes that Disney made or movies made.
Is it though? Like, do you think it was?
I have no idea. I remember enjoying it, but I was probably not thinking at the time about the insensitivities of the blind people.
I remember thinking like, oh, that's crazy, but the TV show's still on or something, like the cartoon. There's a cartoon Magoo, right?
I know in the movie, don't they go back and forth between Leslie Nielsen and like an animated Mr. Magoo?
I don't know. But isn't like the whole thing is like Mr. Magoo just walks into things and he's like, oh, I'm blind. Oopsies. Like,
I think so. But doesn't he like also like walk off cliffs and like drive into oncoming traffic? And...
Yeah. I feel like I could see him. Like I don't know. He's Leslie Nielsen. So. But that is so interesting. I want to unpack that, but maybe now is not the time. But I want to unpack like the whole Mr. Magoo fiasco.
A deep dive on Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about, like, well, it kind of reminds me of, I've been thinking a lot lately about The Emperor's New Groove.
Yes.
Which should not come out in 97. But, Bridget spilled the whole thing.
I got excited.
You were like, Emperor's New Groove.
I got really excited.
She just spilled the whole, not the whole coffee, but a whole bunch of coffee.
Oh, boy.
The Emperor's New Groove was such a shit show to make, and they finally have a documentary out. And
A documentary?
Yeah, that's directed by Sting's wife.
Wait, why? Is she just... she invested in the movie?
Well, Sting... I hope I'm not butchering this. But, like, Disney wanted to do, like, a Phil Collins Tarzan-style thing. So they hired Sting to write the music for The Emperor's New Groove. And then, like... just animation-wise and story, like, everything kind of just was falling apart. Oh, and Sting's wife is, like, I guess she's a filmmaker.
Oh, wow. I didn't know this.
Yeah, don't quote me on it, but I think she's a filmmaker. And she was like, well, can I just film, you know, a documentary alongside, you know, the working of Emperor's New Groove? And then she gets to see, she gets all the footage of everything just, like, falling apart and Sting almost getting fired.
What? Wait, did his music make it in?
Like, one song.
Wow.
But I would love to, like, deep dive on that, and now I'm interested in Mr. Magoo. Just, like, how that... Well, because, you know, this is, like, peak... To bring it back to 1997. Like, this is peak Disney Renaissance.
Yeah.
But this is when it's about to fall. Like, this is, like, the beginning of the end because Hercules is considered a flop.
Why? By who? In the theaters? Was it, like, theatrically or what?
No, it was successful, but it just wasn't Disney Renaissance. Like, Little Mermaid successful, which in Disney's eyes was, like, let's go hang ourselves.
Oh.
So it was, like, the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
And what was my point? I don't know. It's just a very interesting time for...
For Disney?
For Disney. Like, the like, later Renaissance years.
Huh. Yeah. I feel like we should look into that, you know? See what was happening. Watch that documentary.
Give our thoughts. Especially on Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, especially.
Bring it back.
Oh, man.
That and, like, My Favorite Martian.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Bringing it back to My Best Friend's Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to talk about the reviews at the time?
Sure. Well, the reviews were generally positive. Total film I can't speak tonight. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. Me too.
Total Film praised the film, giving it 4 stars out of 5 and stating, "Here, Roberts banishes all memories of Mary Riley and I love Trouble with a lively, nay, sparkling performance." Wait, I said that wrong. Nay, sparkling performance.
You have to talk like Rupert Everett. Nay, sparkling.
Smiling that killer smile, shedding those winning tears, delivering great lines with effortless charm, Roberts is back right where she belongs. Not in a gray period costume, but as the sexy queen of laughs. Which I have not seen that other movie, so I don't know. That's weird to picture. You know what? I gotta say, I don't see her as a period film gal. Okay, her hair... I could maybe see it done up and, like, she could wear a big poofy dress, but her personality,
it just... She's so modern.
She's so modern. It just works. Don't put her in a period film. Anyway.
I agree. I mean, I haven't seen Mary Riley either, but, like, agreed.
Yeah. She's made to wear a men's suit.
She is.
Or some type of sleek dress.
Tiny glasses.
And tiny glasses.
She's meant to laugh. Maniacally, but like in a fun, likable way.
Exactly. While someone tickles her feet off screen.
Well, Gary Marshall's always just tickling her feet.
It's always Gary Marshall. Oh, man. The review also called the film a perfect date movie that proves Robert isn't as crap as we all thought she was. Jeez, that's a little harsh.
So crazy to think, because we just did, for our series E Pray Pod, we just did Pretty Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, her star-making vehicle.
Right.
And it's so crazy to think that, like, after Pretty Woman, she's, like, in serious actress mode.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, make sense to me.
No. I mean, it's good to be versatile and stuff, but I do feel like she has a shtick of sorts, and, like, rom-coms is, like, definitely, like, she just, like, fits so well in that genre.
I think she created it.
And she's, like, the leading lady of it. Right? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, if there's, like, the James Bonds of the world, I know that's a character, but if there's, like, these just, like, male dudes that just are just, like, a main character in a film, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
She has main character energy all these films, for sure.
But, like, the film could be, like, Julia Roberts reading the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
But if she was doing it in, like, the Julia Roberts rom-com way, I'd watch. Like, I don't know.
She's yeah.
So good.
So good. Nick, your man, Roger Ebert. I almost called him Rogert. Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert of Chicago Sun-Times said, "One of the pleasures of Ronald... Is it
that's Bass's.
Bass? Okay. I didn't know if it was Bass or Bass.
All about that bass.
All about that bass. The pleasures of Ronald Bass's bass screenplay is the way it subverts the usual comic formulas that would fuel a plot like this." Which I agree. And Peter Travers of Rolling Stones called it the summer date film supreme for pretty women and the gay men they love.
Agreed. I feel like this Peter Travers review is like, if you need to sell My Best Friend's Wedding, it's for pretty ladies and for gay men.
Yeah.
It's for all of us. Happy Pride. to come together.
Yeah.
And just have a laugh.
Yeah. Have a good old time. You
know, think about love.
Not take life so serious.
Have a sequence where there's like at a dinner table just singing I Say a Little Prayer. And have a karaoke scene where Cameron Diaz sings terribly.
Yeah.
And also have like a nonsensical opening number with ladies that we don't know singing another song.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I don't know.
Well, I guess, do you want to give the synopsis this time around since I talked about the reviews?
Sure. So childhood friends Julianne Potter, played by Julia Roberts, and Michael O'Neill, Dermot Mulroney, not Dylan McDermott, had a deal to marry each other if they were still single by age 28. Now, 4 days before her 28th birthday, O'Neill announces that he's marrying a gorgeous 20-year-old named Kimberly Cameron Diaz. Suddenly realizing that she's actually in love with him, Julia vows to stop the wedding at all costs. However, when she is appointed maid of honor, things get a little more complex.
I love how they just say they get more complex. Like,
they do.
They do. And boy, do they ever. Yeah.
Which, like, can we talk about how ridiculous it is to say 28? Why is that the cap off?
Okay, I guess, I don't know whether to weigh in now or to weigh in.
Just weigh in.
Okay. So, I had a friend, right? And we said if we were not married to, it was a similar situation, but not that similar. Because our chemistry level, it wasn't the same. We weren't almost bumping noses. Running into, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of Julia Roberts and this man, not Dylan McDermott, but
Dermot Mulroney.
They have chemistry and they're really close, like physically close. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? There's something. All I'm trying to say is, okay, so I had a friend. We were good friends. We're still friends. But we were like, yeah, if we're not married by the time we're 40, maybe we'll just get married. You know what I mean? Make it easy for ourselves. If we're like alone and, but it'd be like platonic, you know what I mean? But 28, I cannot imagine that commit. Like,
it's too soon.
I'm saying that's too soon. Too soon. You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I know people that like make this pact. Uh-huh. Probably because of this movie, but like, I feel like everyone forgets about the 28 bit and they're just like 45.
Yeah. 50. I said like 40.
Maybe 35.
Yeah. Which now, the older I get, now I'm like, wow, 40 sounds like it's not soon necessarily for me, but it still feels, you know what I mean? Now I'm like, oh, maybe 50 or like, I don't know.
I've never done that. I've never had some. I think my delusional brain is like, oh, I'll be married. By 28,
you probably will.
I won't be married by 28.
But you'll be married. You don't need to make a pact, Nick. You know
who can I find to make a pact with? Oh, I don't know. I've always had the delusion. I'm like, yeah, well, I'll be married. I'm gonna find my person.
You will. Nikki. Yeah, you're right. No pact needs to be made. And you know what? I don't even know if I want to get married ever, so there's that.
So why have a pact?
Why even have a pact? Yeah, now I'm like, oh, man. I think we broke the pact. I think we're on an understanding. I don't know. We haven't talked about it. I think we just kind of acted like we never made the pact.
At 40 years old, you're going to get a call being like, yeah, I've been married for like 10 years.
I'd be a little upset he wouldn't invite me to his wedding, though.
That's true. That's a whole different movie.
That's a whole nother movie. Oh. Anyway.
But, no, it's a bonkers concept. It's a genius concept for a rom-com, though.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, because I feel like this, like, the story of my best friend's wedding is something that, like, it just seems so natural to me. I'm like, well, this is the quintessential rom-com plot.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's because of my best friend's wedding and it having the, like, admiration, or like, you know, like the being like the pinnacle of rom-coms, if it just like entered my subconscious somehow, I don't know, but this like plot makes so much sense to me for a rom-com.
Yeah, no, it's great. I like that it doesn't follow the typical, like, I don't know, like that, I don't know, spoilers, but the ending, like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't always get what you want, or like the people don't always end up together. Like, it's not always like a happy ending necessarily. Yeah. I mean, it is, but it's like a different, it's not, you know what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're trying to say, but I think this ending is better.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It might be.
But we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about it.
But yeah, what do you think about Julianne Potter, which is Julia Roberts' character?
I love her. She's sassy. She looks great in her men's suits, and she's funny. She's relatable. Like, I don't know. She's, like, against all that love stuff, which I'm like, yeah, me too. I don't know. Like, I'm like, oh, I vibe with her. But then, I don't know. I mean, she clearly loves that other dude, but she never really tells him, so there's that. So it's like, I think, I don't know. Sorry, now I'm just getting ahead. I'm just like thinking about her character. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's lessons in this film, at least for her character. Like, you gotta say things when you feel them.
For sure. Like, she's very, well, she's like, she's someone who, well, she's like my favorite, like, woman of the 90s who, like, is self-sufficient and has her own business. She's like a food critic.
Yeah. Oh, I totally forgot that was her thing, right? In the beginning, she's like eating and they're all worried about impressing her.
Yeah. And like, she's super successful and she's independent. And she has a gay best friend and they're just in New York City.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, the dream.
The living the dream.
She already has the fairy tale.
She has it all.
She has it all. And I think even the, like, In a World guy always says, she has it all.
Yes.
But one thing's missing.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
Yep.
And I don't know. I just love that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, like, she's an interesting character because she does everything wrong and you still love her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Yeah.
But speaking of her love, enter Michael O'Neill, played by Dermot Mulroney. You like him? You don't? What's your thought on Michael?
You know, I don't know. I mean, he's very attractive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he does annoy me at times.
How so?
I think because he's so flirty. I mean, they're both kind of flirty with each other, but they're, you know what I mean? Like
he does look like he's in love with her and never Kimmy.
Yeah.
Played by Cameron Diaz.
There's a lot of things. He even looks disturbed at that dinner where they're all singing and it's, George is like, you know, he's telling the story of how they met and stuff. And he's the only one at the table not smiling, which gives me reason to believe he has feels for her in a subtle level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll get more into the story in a second, but like, it is infuriating to see two people.
Yeah.
That have so much chemistry.
Yes.
Just, like, not acknowledge it.
Yes. Like, at least one person acknowledge it. He never even said, like, oh, yeah, but then, you know, this is what happened or that ship already sailed and there's no, like.
Or in, like, a perfect world in my mind, there's no scene in the movie where they hook up. Or something. I know that would make her more of a villain.
He sees her in, like, lingerie.
Yeah, but, like, or, like, full-on, like, tongue down throat. Like, there's no moment where they're, like, they lose their mind.
No. He didn't even kiss her back.
No.
That made me so mad.
Same, because he was obviously feeling it. Yeah, I think he's...
it's a little sus.
Yeah. Good point, Brie. I was, like, all about to be like, I loved Michael. He's so charming and... attractive.
Too charming, I say.
Something's up.
It's all his fault.
Yes.
Just like flip the script onto him.
You know? Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm not sure how I feel about him.
I know. Brave made a good case. I don't know how I feel.
But he is attractive. But that's all.
What about Kimmy Wallace?
She's cute. She's sweet.
Which is Cameron Diaz's character, by the way.
Yeah. I think she means well. You can't be mad at her. She's, you know, not really. She's doing what she can. You know what I mean? Like, she's got the dude, and she's trying to live her best life. And
she's, like, young and, like, young, wealthy.
Yeah.
She's also played by Cameron Diaz, who, much like Julia Roberts, is so charming.
Yeah.
And just, like, effervescent.
I don't know. I really liked her character. She's funny, too. Like, she's just, like, she's quirky and kind of awkward and I don't know. It's crazy, though. Like, she dresses like she's, like, 60.
She does. Like a 60-year-old on vacation.
Yeah. I'm like, eh. Like, live a little, girl.
True. She's very buttoned up.
Yeah.
Which, like, there is that thing where it's, like, the juxtaposition between Kimmy and Jules.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's, like, very obvious and, like, tradition and non-tradition. And, like, even with Julia Roberts's, like, men's suits, like, menswear attire. And Kimmy's dressed like a house, like a Stepford wife.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, I love that scene where Kimmy is singing karaoke.
Yeah.
And she's, like, so bad, and she knows it, but everyone just can't help but fall in love with her. Mm-hmm. And she's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
She just goes for
it. She goes for it.
And it's very attractive, I would say.
Yeah, because she could have just, like, quit and then just been like, whatever, but she just keeps on keeping on. And
yeah, I don't know. I think Kimmy's a badass a little bit.
Yeah. So what about George, though?
George Downs, played by Rupert Everett, is my man.
He's the best, right?
He's my favorite character in the whole entire movie.
I love him. He's like, you can count on him, you know? But he might be annoyed that you keep calling and leaving crazy messages, you know? But he shows up when you need him, and he's like there for, you know, the laughs or to give you the business and embarrass you.
I love all of that. But I don't know. His character's so fun, and like, he's kind of smooth. He's like a dapper dude, just in general.
He is.
And he's cool.
Yeah, just like he says, like, on the telephone when he's, like, talking about himself.
Yes.
His cat-like moves or whatever he was saying, I don't know. Sleek.
Prowl, yeah.
Oh, boy.
He's hot and he knows it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's, like, my favorite character. And Rupert Everett, just, like, 90s Rupert Everett. I remember him and you'd like this. He was Mr. Claw in Inspector Gadget. Yes,
that's where I know him. Oh my god, I was trying to remember. Like, I'm like, why do I know this attractive man, but why does he feel like a villain to me? He's giving me villain energy. This whole movie, in the back of my mind, I've been thinking, like, if only his hair was over his eyes just a little and he had a scar. Like, there's something. Like, and now that you said that, mm-hmm. It explains it all. Wow. That's where I, okay. Sorry, this whole movie, I'm like, he's so nice in this movie, and it's like hard to believe because I feel like it was instilled in me as someone who watched Inspector Gadget like so many times and saw it in theaters, saw it on the big screen.
It's like your one of your like child memories that just like have been planted into you.
Yeah, he's one of the ultimate villains. So
actually, I was never a fan of that film, and I've only seen Rupert Everett in like he's always so sleek to mm-hmm. me.
I always thought he was a sexy villain as a kid. I was like, ooh, you know?
There is something about Rupert Everett that is very sexy.
Yeah.
Just the way he carries his tall, string bean-like body.
Mm-hmm.
Just like his shoulders just gliding. He is like a, you know what? It might seem cocky what he says about himself being sleek and, you know, tiger-like or whatever he says, but he ain't wrong.
He ain't wrong. Oh, man.
No, I love all the characters in this film too. Like the main characters,
yeah,
they're just so likable.
I agree.
I don't know.
They work so well together too. Like they play off each other's energy. And even though I got Michael and George confused through a lot of it, even 100%. In my notes, I wrote down like their names backwards. And
I feel you. I always get so confused every time I see this movie.
Yeah, it's like if you blink your eye, you miss something. You're like, wait, is that George or is that wait, huh?
Yeah, it's like, why are her and her friend kissing? And then he's like, oh, it's
I thought Dermot he was Maroney. Gay. Oh, boy.
But it's crazy to find out that they weren't friends. Like, I mean, obviously, like, Julia Roberts and Cameron Diaz are probably not friends in real life.
Yeah.
But in my mind. I would have loved like a Rupert Everett, Julia Roberts friendship.
Oh, yeah. Like a real life. Oh, that would have been really cool.
Or even adult Dermot Mulroney. Mm-hmm. Because they have so much chemistry.
They really do. We need the sequel, My Best Friend's Wedding, Part 2. My Best Friend's Divorce.
My Best Friend's Divorce. And she comes in, Jules, and is like...
Wait, she's the she's going to be a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
She's no longer a food critic. She, because of her... okay, because things didn't work out for her, getting involved and trying to break them up, she's like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to professionally break people up. I'm going to do it the right way. I'm going to become a divorce lawyer. And then one of the cases that gets slipped on her desk is going to be Michael and Kimmy. You know? I don't know.
I'm here for it.
I'm going to write this fan fiction later.
Do it. I am actually very curious. I'm like, how is that going to unfold?
Exactly.
And how is Rupert Everett going to come into the mix?
Oh, he will be there.
He's also a divorce attorney.
Or he could be the judge.
Ooh.
This is getting a little out of hand.
Like, the gavel. I love it.
Anyway.
You know what else I really loved? What you'd call choices.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the soundtrack?
I love the soundtrack. It's great. It gives me feel good vibes. Just, I don't know.
Dude, that reggae mix of I Say a Little Prayer is wild.
It really is. And it's opened my eyes to a whole new world. I remember though, like when reggae covers of things, that was like a thing in the 90s.
Oh, like the UB40, like Can't Help Falling in Love.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? Bring back reggae covers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It just reminds me that there was a time where reggae covers ruled. And I don't know why they stopped like making them.
Brie, from... Okay, My Best Friend's Wedding soundtrack it spawned. So this cover of I Say a Little Prayer charted.
Really?
Yes. And
the reggae cover?
The reggae cover charted because of My Best Friend's Wedding.
That is crazy.
And it's crazy to me that, like, we lived in a world. I love it. We need to, what's a song now that they can just make a reggae cover of?
I know.
Like an Adele song?
I guess. But see, this song is like from the 60s originally anyway, right? It's like Dionne Warwick.
So we need like a 90s song.
Yeah, now we need a 90s song, but it needs to be played now.
A reggae version of...
Maybe like a Nirvana song. I don't know.
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I can't even like picture that.
No.
But see, that's the thing is like you don't really think of like I Say a Prayer for You. Like you don't think of that as like how would they make it a reggae song. It
My
works,
Heart
though.
Will Go On, the reggae mix.
My Heart Will Go On. You know, they can make it like a, it's like an upbeat.
I think I can hear.
Yeah, it just would be a little quicker, you know?
Yeah.
Like you just don't hold on to the notes as long and you just bop.
It.
Yeah.
My Heart Will Go On.
Yeah.
The reggae mix. My Best Friend's Wedding too.
But yeah, there we go.
Because their hearts will go on.
Yeah.
The reggae mix.
Perfect.
Oh my God.
Nikki, you're in charge of the soundtrack of that movie. Yes. We'll make it happen.
Yes.
We don't have any resources or connections, but.
Call our friend Julie Robb on the phone to make it happen.
Yeah.
Dermot Mulroney. And I'll call him Dylan McDermott the whole time.
And he like almost refused to be a part of it. And.
Yep.
Oh.
But then we'll get Dylan McDermott to step in for Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah.
And it'll just be...
It'll work out.
Yeah.
No one will know the difference.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about Say a Little Prayer in general? Because I love that song.
I love that song. Yeah. I've always loved that song. It's such a bop. Especially the part where they're like, forever and ever. It's just a feel-good song. It makes you want to get up and dance.
It does. Yeah, it is like such a feel good song. What did you think, before we get into like, just like the film beat by beat, what did you think of the opening sequence?
the opening sequence.
Which is the ladies that are like in the wedding dress.
That was so strange. It was so strange. I didn't like it a lot until towards the end where they actually started dancing more fun because I thought it was a little strange and weird. I mean, I don't know. I think, hold on, let me see what I said on my notes.
Because hot take, I do not like the opening.
Okay, I was wondering what you were going to say because you looked at me and I was like, do you feel the same or do you love the opening and did I insult you?
No, I know everyone loves this opening.
They do?
But like, they do. And I love the camp of it all.
Yes.
But like, every time I see this opening, I don't know why. I'm just like, this is too long.
No, okay, I agree with you. It lasts far too long and it doesn't get good until towards the end where they're actually doing more interesting choreography because it's just like slow moving and it's just like a yellow background or something really simple and they're in simple dresses and it's very 1950s or something and it's very like, ooh, to me, I'm like, ooh, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, ooh.
But it does remind me of like every like classic like 80s movie where it's like, there's like one weird part in mm-hmm. it that you just like forget about. I don't know. So I'm kind of nostalgic for it in a way. I'm like, oh, that makes no sense. Oh, that, remember those days when everything didn't have to be perfect and it could be kind of like dumb.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. In my notes, I just said, what is up with this intro? And okay, when they dance, though, it's lit. Very 1950s, though. That's, I don't know. I was like when they finally were dancing, it was like fun. But when they're just looking at the camera and singing and it was lasting for like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I wonder how long that intro was. It felt like a long time.
Okay, so it's not just me.
It felt like a really long time.
Cool. Yeah. It's long. It's too damn long.
Well, do you want to
yeah.
get into it and just discuss?
Yeah, let's get into my best friend's wedding. After all this, finally.
Finally, here we are. So like we mentioned, the premise of the movie, we start.
It all happens at the top.
It all happens at the top.
Like,
yeah.
You get debriefed real quick. You're like, what is this nonsense with these ladies singing in wedding dresses? And then they waste no time giving you the entire plot of this movie.
I kind of appreciate that, though.
Word. But anyways, continue.
So 3 weeks before her 28th birthday, New York City food critic Julianne Jules Potter, played by Julia Roberts, receives a call from her lifelong friend Michael O'Neill, which is Dermot Mulroney, as we mentioned. He's a Chicago sports writer. Years earlier, the two agree that if they were both unmarried by age 28, they would marry each other. Michael tells her that in 4 days, he will marry beautiful Kimmy Wallace, a college student 8 years his junior, whose father owns the Chicago White Sox. How convenient.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that is true. So, like, Michael is a sports writer. Kimmy is, like, heir to the White Sox throne.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Good for him. It almost seems too good to be true.
It's true. I mean, I like how they did set up, like, they would probably meet. Like, this isn't too random that she's, like, a college student and he's 28, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So at least they would know each other. I don't know. What do you think about, because they don't make a huge deal about it, but what do you think about the age difference between Michael and Kimmy?
I don't know. I mean, it's not a very big one to me.
It's, like, 8 years.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess age differences don't bother me a whole lot unless it's like 20 or more. But even then, it depends. Well, it depends on how, I think, because the older you get, right, the less.
Yeah, it matters.
It matters somehow.
Well, that's where I feel like a 20-year-old I couldn't personally relate to if I was dating them.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Versus a 28-year-old, I feel like you're in like completely different spots in your life.
Probably.
But, you know. If it doesn't bother you, like, if you connect on a different, like, why not? It's not like she's, like, just turned 18.
Yeah. Maybe she's more serious, too. Or, like, is, you know how some people just want things in their life? They're like, let's get married and have kids or something. Yeah. And they're, you know how some people are just ready for certain things and.
Well, Kimmy wears pearls and shift dresses. She's obviously ready. She's very traditional.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, I guess.
Like, a shift dress says, I'm ready for commitment, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, which Jules is my queen. Like, she's living in New York City, living a fabulous life and wearing men's suits and tiny glasses.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Those tiny glasses are everything.
They are, with her crazy red hair. I love it.
Love.
So she's living her best life. Anyways. But yeah, so realizing that Michael's the love of her life, Jules resolves to sabotage the wedding. Arriving in Chicago, she reunites with Michael and meets Kimmy, who asks her to be a maid of honor. Which, can we talk about that scene in the airport where Jules is like, just, you know, on the warpath essentially, and then she bumps into Dermot Maroney,
mm-hmm.
Michael, and just like that chemistry, like they almost kiss.
Yes, they almost kiss. That's what I'm saying. Like, they clearly, I don't know.
Like, that was an embrace.
Yes.
They like touch noses.
Right.
And then in comes Kimmy.
Yeah.
Just giving her a big hug and being like, you know, be my maid of honor.
And she's like, I always wanted a sister.
Yeah.
She's like so sweet and like innocent. I don't know.
It is almost like a thing where you can like watch Jules's face. Like, you're supposed, like, she's like wants to hate Kimmy so bad.
Yeah.
And like throughout this movie, especially this first scene, you're like, you see Jules like be like, aw, man.
She can't hate her.
Yeah. Like, she's not a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the bad. Like, what? Yeah, she's just like a puppy dog. Like, Kimmy's a puppy dog.
Pretty much. And then, well, Jules schemes to break up the couple, but her, so she attempts to humiliate Kimmy at the karaoke bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
which is like the first thing they do. Like, they get off the plane and they're like, let's go to karaoke. But it's only because Jules is like sabotaging in her head. She's like, she overhears Kimmy be like, I hate karaoke. Like, I can't sing. So Jules is like, let's go karaokeing.
Right. She's like, oops, I didn't know this was a karaoke bar. I'm crazy.
Whoops.
Like, uh-huh, sure.
But Brie, you're the karaoke queen. So yeah. I feel like this is like your scene.
The karaoke scene, I love. I miss it. I want to go karaokeing again soon. Like, this summer, I want to go. Like, multiple occasions. Maybe for my birthday for real this time, you know?
Noted.
I'm going to get some cojones and not back out like last time, hopefully. But
yeah, like, Kimmy gets on the mic, even being pestered by Jules.
Mm-hmm.
And she sings,
I don't know what to do with myself.
I just don't know what to do with myself.
I think that was pretty good.
Oh, well, I wasn't crying.
Even though it was like kind of, I think that was actually pretty good.
Me, 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 me. Who did you?
You like know what to do with yourself.
I do.
Even when you're trying not to know, you know.
But yeah, Cameron Diaz just doesn't know what to do with herself. But like the whole crowd, like she like is really bad. And like Michael's like, you're really bad.
Yeah, he was like, that was terrible.
But like the whole crowd, because she like commits so much, everyone's like cheering for her at the end.
Yeah.
And Jules is like shaking her fist into the sky. Just like, gosh, darn it.
Her facial expressions throughout the scene is like so funny. Because she's just like, what? What is happening? She's like looking around like at the crowd, like they're clapping. Like, what's going on? And then she like eventually she's like, wow, okay, this girl's doing it. Okay, respect. You know, you see like a moment of her like shifting again, like being like, dang it.
Foiled again.
Foiled again.
Maybe Jules really is a villain.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And then Jules manipulates Kimmy into asking her father to offer Michael a job, which Jules knows will anger Michael. And this also fails.
Yeah. Everything, it's like every single thing she does seems to fail. But she keeps trying.
Because she loves Michael. It's because of that chemistry, though.
But she just, see, this is also infuriating watching this movie, because at a certain point, wouldn't you just be like, okay, I'm just going to cut through the bullshit and just be like, hey, just like tell him that you love him or like something, or like I have feelings for you, just something. Like, don't just go roundabout. What is she so afraid of?
Well, right.
I mean, what's worse?
That's true.
Ruining your best friend's wedding or getting rejected. Like, just deal
both
with it.
Are kind
be a man.
Of bad. Be a lady. Be a lady. Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Grow out that armpit hair and be Julia Roberts.
Right?
But so, okay. So enter George Downs, played by Rupert Everett.
Mm-hmm.
So, because these plans don't work and Jules is frustrated, she begs her friend George for help. And then he flies to Chicago. And basically, George is like, girl, what you said.
Yeah.
Just tell him that you love him. And, yeah, just, like, lay it all out there.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the most sensible thing. Like, I feel like he's, like, the, you know, in Get Out.
Uh-huh.
He's, like, the friend. The TSA guy. Oh. Friend.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, like. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea. You're going to get murdered there. Like,
yeah.
He's like the man of the people, George, I think.
I think so.
But yeah, so does Jules listen to George?
She no. does not. But you know what? In her defense, that scene where she's like trying to tell him things, isn't he getting excited? There's like something going on that's like related to the wedding. And it's like.
It's true. And like also after the karaoke scene, mm-hmm. like Michael is kind of like even more in love with Kimmy. Like all these plans.
Yeah.
That Jules, like Jules kind of makes Michael fall in love with Kimmy even more.
Yeah. She kind of, her plans backfire even more. Like you're right. It's like.
She cements it like every single time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
And that's why you don't meddle.
That's true. It's like a cautionary tale if you think about it. But yeah, instead, Jules is like, yeah, I'm engaged to George. Oh my God. And what does she say? Oh my God. Oh, she says that George has come back for a few hours to fuck me.
Oh, yeah. That was so funny.
But yeah, like the whole time when they're in the limo and George is like, George is such a good friend. He's like, just goes with the bit and is like, yeah, we're engaged. Mm-hmm. And he's like all over her. And Jules is like, ew.
She's like, get off
away
me.
From me. Like the whole time. And like, he's really like trying the hardest.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, committing. She's just like, she created the story. She can't just throw it away immediately.
Like she wants to make Michael jealous, but she's also like, I think she could try harder. To, like, go along with this lie that she's creating.
Yeah. I mean, just for at least at the top of the scene, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, this is my fiance. And immediately he's like, get off me.
Like, make it convincing, girl.
Right? Like, smooching. Like, if you're really trying to make him jealous, just start smooching. Or fake smooching.
Well, he's gay anyways.
Yeah. You don't have to really smooch.
Well, it doesn't mean anything. Like, George is gonna get it.
Yeah. Anyway. So when they end up, they go to the wedding party and George tells the story about how they met
mm-hmm.
and he sings, I Say a Little Prayer, which everyone chimes in and starts singing.
It's so good. This is like the best part of the movie, arguably.
I think if the credits rolled right after that scene, I would have been like, great movie.
Standing ovation.
Standing ovation. It's so funny because they give themselves like a standing ovation at the end. Like everyone that was singing is like, woo.
Well, doesn't George like start it's kind of like a musical number,
mm-hmm.
which you got to give it up to PJ Hogan, who directed this for just, he really just like doesn't, he's just going for it.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, isn't he like, yeah, Jules and I, you know, talking about him and Jules. And then he's like, the moment she wakes up before she puts on her makeup, you know?
Say a little prayer for you. It's just so, everyone, and even the mom, like, it's so crazy because it's like her best friend, her, you know, Michael. It's like, well, no, it's not his family. It's Kimmy's family.
Yes.
And they're in love with George.
They're, like, so ready for a musical moment.
Yeah, everyone's so ready. I just love that.
And the two, like, are they cousins or sisters?
Yeah.
With, like, funny hats? They're just, like, ready to do background vocals.
Yep.
And, like, the uncle at the end is just, like, doing the low note.
I just love that. Why can't we have that at our, like, family gatherings or something?
We basically do.
Oh.
But I love it.
So good.
So, and then the whole time, Michael looks pissed.
He does. Okay, yeah. See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe it's because he really, like, maybe he can't sing. Maybe he's just feeling really insecure because there's all these, like, they go to karaoke and people are falling in love with Kim. Maybe he's just feeling that right. type of way.
We never actually got to hear him sing at the karaoke place.
Same for Jules, which means they're perfect for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm also making a case that maybe George is the hero of the story.
Yeah.
Jules is the villain.
Mm-hmm.
But that Michael should get with the villain. I don't know.
Is that where you stand?
That's kind of where I stand, at least at this point.
Oh.
But yeah, so after they say a little prayer at the dinner table. So yeah, George flies home and is like, okay, later.
Yeah.
And Jules tells Michael that her relationship with George is over. And Michael admits that he feels a little jealous and then gives her a chance to confess her feelings. But she's just like... like, lets it go by. It's so frustrating. And then they, like, look at each other. And Michael's like, this is our song.
I hate this. The way you look
tonight.
I hate this part of the movie. I mean, I love it, but I also hate it. Because it's, like, so frustrating. Because, like, yeah.
But they go on a date.
They go on a date. He asks her. He's like, hey, can I spend the day with you?
Yes.
He asks her on a date, basically, without calling it a date. They're on this riverboat or their ferry, whatever. And he's like, yeah. Me, you know, do you think I'm making the right decision marrying this Kimmy girl? And she, I forgot what she says, but he's like, we don't even have a song, her and I. And he's, and then he's like, you and I have a song. And it's, you know,
the way you look tonight. Tonight.
And then they end up dancing. But he's like, Kimmy says, if you love someone, you should say it or else the moment will pass. And then it's like, she should say it right there. And then it just passes.
Also, if you're just friends with someone, how is your song The Way You Look Tonight?
That's what I'm saying. That they're way, they're definitely more than friends. I mean,
I guess.
And then they dance, they slow dance. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love how in the film, like they, like the way they light it, it's like when they're having this moment together on the ferry,
mm-hmm.
like it's lit where you can't see the other passengers on the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And then like once that moment passes, like it's like literal, like sunlight
mm-hmm.
where you can see. Everyone's on the ferry with them.
Yeah. I know like what you mean. It felt very intimate for a moment there.
Did like they were the only little... ones in the room.
Yeah.
Oh, so frustrating. So
frustrating. The movie would have been over if she was just like
yes.
Yeah, and then they would elope and the you know, but no. That would just be too easy.
No, instead Kimmy is like I'll scheme some more. How about that? I could have told him I loved him, but let me scheme.
You mean Jules?
Oh, yeah, it's Jules. Sorry. It feels so on the nose because Julia and Jules are so similar.
I got confused throughout this movie thinking her name was Julia, and then I realized it's Juliana. Jules is short for Juliana. Is that right?
Yeah, or like Julianne?
Or, yeah.
Yeah, so like Kimmy's father... the White Sox man,
mm-hmm.
like Jules goes to his office and uses his email account to forge a message to Michael's boss asking Michael to be fired for allowing Kimmy's father to hire him at Kimmy's insistence. And she saves a message rather than sending it, but later realizes that Kimmy's father actually sent the message. And then she's like, Michael, help me. But it kind of backfires. And he calls off the wedding with Kimmy.
Yeah. Well.
Which is a mess.
This whole part is a mess. And so cringy. And just. If she just said her real feelings, it could have been avoided, you know?
But like, why the next. Why all this rigmarole?
Yeah. It seems like a lot of work. I think she just is so afraid of this vulnerability or something that it just is making her do crazy things. And.
I think so.
Right, because she didn't want the email. The whole point was for him to see it. But still, it's not really great because then it would still have had the same effect. It just wouldn't have like a real... I think he would still be pretty upset. But it wouldn't be like his boss wouldn't have called him. It wouldn't be like... Yeah. Like this made it really real. The whole fact that the email got out. You know what I mean?
Well, and also it's like Jules has the option to just delete the message. She realizes she's doing something wrong and she's like, okay, I'll delete it. And then she was like, what's the harm in, like, leaving it up save for later situation, mm-hmm. which why?
No.
Why when you if you're sneaking into someone's office to forge an email?
Yeah, don't you think they're going to see it?
Yeah, why would you save for later? But I don't know, I'm just saying, maybe I don't know, she's a maybe the 90s office life was different.
Maybe they're not as like attached. They're not like looking at their inbox 24/7.
Maybe. Well, he does. Like the reason why the email gets out is because the Kimmy's dad is just like, just send all those emails I haven't sent yet.
Yeah, he just tells the secretary, just, you know, do it. Send them.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't need to look at them. And that's why you don't hack into someone's computer and write up an email and save it for later.
That is so cool. Like, why would you save it for later? I know that's like one tiny detail, but I'm like.
Yeah. If her thought process was for Michael to stumble into his office and just see it pulled up on the computer, that is a chance that he would have to also force, and that'd take a lot. So like, why wouldn't you just print it out or something and then like leave it somewhere? Or like, I don't know, just don't do it.
Maybe not. Maybe just tell him how you feel. I mean, that's not a movie, but like, it's a thought.
It's too much work. Okay. Well, so next the next morning, Jules discovers that neither Michael nor Kimmy have told anyone else that the wedding is off. She tries to manipulate the couple into breaking up for good, but Michael and Kimmy decide to get married after all. And Jules finally confesses her love to Michael and passionately kisses him. Kimmy witnesses this and drives away, pursued by Michael, who's followed by Jules in a caterer's truck, and she calls George, who assures her that Michael loves Kimmy. So,
which this scene is such a roller coaster.
It really is. It is so funny though. Like after she kisses him, and then they're all like running and chasing after each other over. Like that part was kind of comical.
He's like Kimmy, and she's like Michael. But no one's screaming for Jules.
And no. That's so sad.
So sad.
Also, it's the guests at the wedding, they don't know. They're just like, oh, yeah, that's that girl from New York. She's just being silly. Like, that's his good friend. Like, no one's knowing any of this drama's happening. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, like, I think it's crazy, too, because, like, Kimmy, they just make up. So, Kimmy and Michael just make up.
Right.
And Jules decides, this is the time. This is the time to tell Michael how I feel.
Yeah, very inopportune time.
It is. I mean, she might as well have just gone to the wedding and, like, did a speak now moment and forever hold your peace and, like, barged in.
Basically.
She should have just done that at this point. But no, she decides to chase him down and be like, pick me. I'm your girl. I want to make you happy.
After I've done all these terrible things.
And then she, like, kisses him. And the saddest part to me is he doesn't kiss her back.
That was really sad.
And then chases after Kimmy, who witnesses. And then, like, when she calls George, George is completely right. Because he's like, girl, who's chasing after you?
Mm-hmm.
Just think about that. That's a lesson for all of us. If no one's chasing after you and you're chasing after them.
True.
Give it up.
Yeah. True.
I don't know. Do you have any? What are your thoughts?
I mean, it was like a bit of a roller coaster. I don't know. I think just the more she tries to make them break up or whatever, or, you know, the closer they come together, it's just like you're right, like it cements things and stuff, but it's like, I don't know. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? It's like she's, whatever result she wanted, she's just making it worse for herself throughout this whole film, and especially around like that, the wedding, because it's like so close to the wedding. You know what I mean? And like you said, they just made up. So what are they going to do? Like, she's going to confess how she feels, and that's not going to, it's just the timing. I think this movie is like, timing is everything.
I think so.
You got to pick your battles. You know what I mean? And you got to choose, got to say how you feel. You got to do things at the right time. You can't just play with people's feelings.
Yeah. Like,
or if they're in a relationship, you got to respect certain things. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things where I feel like she's just kind of,
she's holding on.
Yeah.
For sure. She's like holding on to this idea of her and Michael. She probably secretly wanted them to like get together. This is probably just like a big lesson in life anyways.
Yeah.
Because like she wouldn't feel this way if she wasn't holding on to that possibility of staying single until she was 28 so she can marry Michael, who is the one for her.
Right.
Just based on chemistry. Yeah. The chems. You know?
Yeah.
And she let that moment pass. You know, every... I don't know. But I agree with you. She... You have to, like, act on your feelings.
Yeah.
Which is what Kimmy says and blah, blah, blah. Moral of the story. I don't know.
This movie just frustrates me. But
yeah. Kimmy goes missing.
Kimmy goes missing. And Jules, she finds Michael at the Chicago Union Station and she confesses to everything, like all the bad things she's done, you know, throughout the film. He forgives her and tells her that here at the station's where he proposed to Kimmy and she accepted and they split up to look for Kimmy. Yeah. Which I feel like the next scene is like,
it's like
where shit gets real.
Well, yeah, so like Jules is looking all around for Kimmy and then she finds Kimmy in the bathroom of Comiskey Park, and there this like a packed bathroom.
Yeah, it's like got several stalls.
Yes.
Full of ladies.
A diverse ball game. Plethora of women. And Kimmy confronts Jules. And she's like, you try to steal my man. She didn't say that, but she kind of did.
Yeah, no, she was like, what the fuck do you want, bitch?
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't she like
metaphorically takes off her earrings, literally takes off her pearls.
It's the first time we ever hear her like curse or get like anything other than being like really sweet. Like, she's pushed this poor girl to the breaking point.
She has, which I don't know. Personally, and I want to get your thoughts on this. If I was Kimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And my fiance has this like best friend that he's like secretly in love with.
Yeah.
I would be like day one air like karaoke bathroom scene, corner her and be like, bitch. Do you know what I mean?
Set things straight. Set
Set the tone.
Set the tone. Mm-hmm.
But of course I'm not like Kimmy, the saint. But yeah, basically like Jules and Kimmy. It basically turns into like an episode of Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
For a hot second.
Oh, that one girl is like, fight, fight, fight.
And like Jules is like, well, Michael's the love of my life. And then Kimmy's like, well, you tried to break up our wedding. And then everyone turns on Jules and is like, boo.
Boo. Oh my God. That scene was so entertaining.
No. And then Jules finally does have to apologize and be like, yeah, Kimmy, like.
And then she's like, okay, this is what gets me though. She's like, listen, all I want to do is help you get back to the wedding. And just like, how are you supposed to trust her? Honestly, if I was Kimmy, mm-hmm. I'd be like, I'll find my own ride. Thank you. Like, I don't trust you. Don't come near me. Like,
basically, I would be like, okay, but I would be like side eyeing.
Yeah. Like every step, like, I don't know. Like, she really has not done herself any favors. Jules hasn't, you know what I mean, like, to build a good relationship with this Kimmy girl.
No, which is crazy because this is our protagonist.
Yeah,
so we're like, yeah, Jules, like, as the audience.
Yeah,
but like just like replaying this with you right now, I'm like, oh, why would you ever trust this lady that we love?
Yeah, you shouldn't trust her. Oh, but so they go back. The wedding proceeds. At the reception, Jules gives a heartfelt speech as Kimmy's maid of honor. And Jules allows the newlyweds to temporarily have The Way You Look Tonight as their song until they find their own song. Jules and Michael share their goodbyes, both finally moving on. Which, okay.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about this. Like, on one hand, I'm like, in a way, it's kind of like The Way You Look Tonight is kind of like, it's, I think it could symbolize her like letting go a bit, being like, oh, I guess this doesn't have to be our song. It could be your, you know, whatever. But at the same time, it's like, it's almost like, hey, well, y'all don't have a song, but we do. And it's like rubbing it in her face even more if you think about it.
Oh my God. It's kind of like earlier in the film, Kimmy tells Jules, she's like, he has you on a pedestal and me in his arms, mm-hmm. which like, with The Way You Look Tonight, that kind of just, like, proves that point.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're like letting them borrow the song, but like this song's always going to make poor Kimmy think about you and her husband.
Yeah, and probably makes Michael think about her too, because that's their song. That's the one they slow dance to or whatever. You know what I mean? It's kind of a terrible, like, why not a different song, you know? Something like Lady in Red or, I don't know, I'm just like, whatever those typical romance songs are.
I love Lady in Red.
The way you look.
Yeah. Oh my god. You know what's so funny though?
What?
I was like, in my head, I was thinking to myself, I was like, oh, what's another love song to say? And I could only think of Lady in Red. How is that like
in red?
How?
I always thought that song was so romantic, but it's also like, do you ever, who wears red?
That's true.
Except Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. That would have been a good one. Just saying.
So Julia Roberts again. This is so unfair to poor Kimmy Bree. Justice for Kimmy.
Justice for Kimmy.
Oh my god. But then my favorite scene happens.
Oh, I love this.
So the movie is coming to a close. Jules says goodbye to Michael, which I do love. Like there's like, you know, it's like everyone's throwing the rice. Yeah. And Kimmy and Michael are going away and they're, I don't know, whatever married people do.
Whatever they do.
I'm not, you know.
Not too sure.
I'm not too sure. I'm sure it's not like the old days. I don't know what they do. Probably
the cans on the back of the...
Yeah. Where do they go, though? Do they just go to a hotel
and just get nasty right away? Like, okay.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. I don't understand what happens after you get married. It's, like, so weird.
It's a long day, though. What if, like, all of that, like... Since people aren't, like, virginal brides anymore, like, what if, like, literally they just go to sleep afterwards? Like, most. Yeah. Hit me up if you're married.
I'm confused, too. In a lot of movies, is it, like, nighttime or daytime after the party is over?
Shouldn't it be
nighttime? But then sometimes when the car drives away, it's daytime.
You know what's so unfair?
Hmm.
Like, okay, like, in this movie, the reception's still going on. But, like, if I get married, I want to tear that house down. And I want to be partying. All night.
Nikki, the way you're slamming your fist down is mildly concerning.
But like, why at my wedding am I gonna...
Well, you're supposed to leave for... You're gonna leave last. Is that what you're saying? Like, you want to be the last one dancing with your boo. And like...
No. Actually, I would love...
You don't want to be
the last. If you're out there listening, I know you'll agree. But, I think an Irish goodbye would be great.
What's an Irish goodbye?
Like, don't tell anyone. Like, you just all slip of a out? Sudden, I'm like dancing to Pitbull.
Yes.
With my husband.
Dallas. We're just
fist pumping, like, we're the Jersey Shore. With you, of course.
Of course.
And then all of a sudden, we just leave. We're like, that was great. And now it's like 2 a.m. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. Don't say, because like the people that would be offended, mm-hmm. like your mother or whatever, they're left already gone. By then.
Yeah.
So just leave.
Yeah.
That's all. I don't know. Hot take. As someone that's never been married, though, so you know, what do I know?
I love this. Nikki, there better be Pitbull at your wedding party.
If I get married, my wedding reception, I'm going to totally wear a bald cap.
That sounds so lit. Pitbull. Oh my god.
But my best friend's wedding. Wait, oh, you know, Mr. Worldwide. Anyways.
So, your favorite scene.
Well, before my favorite scene, they're about to leave.
Oh, right.
You know, Michael and Kimmy are like about to be like in the just married mobile.
Right.
And Michael out of the crowd just like runs to Jules and gives her a big hug.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really sweet like just like nod to her.
Yeah.
But then Jules is all bummed out and sitting there at the wedding reception and she pulls out her 90s flip phone.
Love.
And none other than George is on the phone. Mm-hmm. And he's basically like, she's sitting here in a lilac dress or a lavender dress.
Mm-hmm.
And you think to yourself, couldn't she use a friend? He didn't say anything like,
yeah.
But, like, I'm paraphrasing.
He's like narrating. Like, she's like, wait, I didn't tell you my dress was lavender.
And he's like, you're going to find a dashing man across the room. And there won't be marriage. There won't be sex. But there will be dancing. And then he comes over to her. And then the guy in the wedding band sings, like, I say a little prayer.
Their song.
And then they dance. And that's the happy ending.
Yeah.
Jules deserves and that I want.
That was so, I loved it. It was so cute. Oh. And the song playing too. He's genius. What a good friend. Like, he really knows how to, you know, pick a girl up, you know?
I know. Like, isn't that what you want?
Plus, he looks good. You know?
He does. Like, if until, that's who she should be married to in, like, a Boston marriage.
Yeah.
Why not her and George?
That's what I'm saying. Get the benefits of, you know.
Why get married?
Well, our Boston marriages, though, that they don't exist anymore, right?
Oh.
Wasn't that a thing?
Are they just gay now?
Well, I mean...
Well, this is like a weird tangent.
No, but I thought you told me a while ago, like, that they don't exist. Like, technically. Like, remember, it's like if you were together for 8 years.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that they're, like, legally binding.
They don't recognize it anymore. Yeah. Maybe it's because the option of gay marriage is more available. Is that it?
Yeah, but also, like, all Boston marriages aren't because they're, like, secretly homo.
No, they're not. But that the benefits, there should be benefits, right?
I don't know. This is, like, a different story, but, like... But yeah, like, I feel like it's not really fair that you can't, like, you have to be blood related or married to someone to, like, see them in the hospital. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not see them in the hospital, but, you know, like, be.
If you've been together for a good chunk of time. I don't know. I really need to explore this whole Boston marriage situation and what it all means. I think
it's more just like a phrase or like a thing, but that's not like a technical thing. Yeah. You know?
But it used to be, right?
I don't
know. Like a legal thing. I thought so.
But I just love,
anyway, I'm sorry.
I love the Rupert Everett and Julia Roberts of it all. I just think, I don't know, like, this is the perfect way to end this movie. Because, like, of course, Jules can't end up with Michael.
Right.
Like, that's fucked up to be like, just like after all this. Poor Kimmy, yeah, after all the lying and cheating and stealing, to like, they can't end up together.
Yeah.
But Jules can have a dance with George.
Yeah.
With their song.
There we go. And he's in a similar situation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. He doesn't have like a pact to get married with anybody. He's kind of living his own dream too, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Having dinner parties, being interrupted by Jules.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on My Best Friend's Wedding?
I really loved this movie. I don't know. I would love it for my collection, possibly. And I love this era of Julia Roberts. I love her with the big curly red hair. I don't know. Like, George... His character's so charming and funny. Like, I would watch this just for that scene, that dinner scene with Same. The Say a Little Prayer.
Oh, man. That scene and then the end when they dance to the song at the wedding.
It's like movie magic. It's like genius. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm, like, so glad we get two more 90s Julia Roberts films.
Same. Yeah. Thank you for introducing me to this movie. Because I didn't really, like, I had maybe heard of it, but... Yeah, without this, the summer of Roberts, I don't know if I would have, I mean, eventually I probably would have seen it, but you know, it was about time.
It's always on TV somewhere, I feel. Yeah. No, I'm glad I knew you were going to love this movie, though. There's too many, like, bonkers things that happen and, like, so many, like, singing montages.
I love that.
It's like, how can you not love it?
Yeah.
There's a gay best friend.
Yeah. Love that. So what about you? Any final thoughts on My Best Friend's Wedding?
I, like, concur. I think, yeah, honestly, everything in this movie is really great, and I love how it's like an anti-rom-com, mm-hmm. but also, like, one of the most successful romantic comedies of all time.
Right.
Which, like, the irony, it's so awesome to me, and it's not lost. But, what was I going to say? I don't know. This is also peak Julia Roberts. Like, Julia Roberts is the most Julia Roberts in this film. And I don't know, everything just kind of works. But if You took away all the Dermot Mulroney stuff, all the Kimmy stuff, and you just made a love story between Jules and George.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my favorite movie of all time.
That'd be a really good movie, too. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It would have been very entertaining. It's very, I guess, like Will and Grace energy.
It's true.
You know?
Yes.
Just saying. Wait, when did Will and Grace come out?
98?
So were they inspired? Because they, just saying, red hair, dark haired man. There's no other connection.
Not at all.
Just the hair. They all have the same hair.
One person has red hair, the other has dark hair. I don't know, but I love this movie. It's a classic.
Yeah.
But
well, that's all I got, really.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah. So be sure to rate us and review us on iTunes. And if you'd like to write into the show with questions or movie club suggestions, you can email us at thelatetothepartypod@gmail.com. Yeah, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for